Thanks for tuning in to the Replatform podcast, sponsored by Hypersonics and Attract, hosted by me, James Gunn, and Paul Rogers. Warm welcome if it's your first episode. We put a lot of time and effort into bringing you amazing guests and great content all for free. Help us keep it that way. Refer us to other people in your network. Tell other people you exist and let them know what you like about the podcast. Share our posts on LinkedIn and Twitter. Give us a bit of amplification. And the best thing you can do is rate our show on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever else you're listening or watching it, and tell others to rate us, because that really does help with our visibility. So let's set up our latest episode and introduce you to our guests. So I was lucky enough to host a panel at Paul's recent Pulse event with today's guest, Tim. And the Bottle Club is a multi-brand e-commerce store, sells, I think it was around 10,000 different alcohol products. It's a dangerous place if you love whiskies. I've noticed that. It's achieved considerable growth in the last few years. Paul's worked with them for many years. As I said, I really enjoyed the panel session with talking to Tim about product discovery and multi-brand. So we're going to expand a bit more on that and other topics today. So warm welcome, Tim, who's the head of e-commerce in the Bottle Club.
Nice to see you guys.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. I'll tell you what, before we start asking you all the annoying questions, do you want to give people a bit of a flavour for who you are, your background, what brought you to the Bottle Club?
Yep. So I've been running the Bottle Club for like 3 years now. I came in originally from a design background. Alcohol can often be quite a stuffy category, and you know, with like the connoisseurs and whiskey experts and wine connoisseurs and things. So we rebranded the Bottle Club from what it was previously to this kind of more modern interpretation, taking aspects from lifestyle brands like I Saw It First, ASOS, Misguided, and then using that to then obviously sell alcohol instead of clothes. I think we've found a niche within that market, while still selling the same products as everybody else.
Great. So I'll ask the first question. So the Bottle Club has grown considerably over the last 2 to 3 years. So since you've been involved, so I worked with the Bottle Club pre you, and it was really small. And then obviously since you joined, and there's a bit more of a strategy behind it, and then obviously the pandemic, it's grown really fast. So what has driven that growth?
Yeah, I think COVID was obviously one of the biggest drivers. E-commerce boomed, and so did alcohol retail. When the bars and restaurants were closed, everybody still wanted to drink. They wanted to go and find those products from somewhere else. And another big thing for us, which we talked in the summit about, is that many of the grocers only sell a couple of products from the bigger brands like Hennessy or Glenmorangie or Jack Daniel's. They only sell 3 or 4 products by each. Whereas what we do is we kind of grow with the consumer, and as they kind of build an affinity to a brand and to the category, they can expand. And we've got 12 Jack Daniels, for example, instead of 4. We've got 15 different Glenmorangies versus the 2 that they sell in Tesco's. So that's been a big driver for us. Access and Google shopping and people looking for those products and then again growing with us. And then we're also always trialing things. So we're always looking for the next way of finding a new customer or getting and having a conversation with somebody that we wouldn't have necessarily had before. So we've partnered with O Beach and Ibiza to run events, and you know, that's kind of fits our audience. And then we've done things like Spotify ads, and some of them haven't landed as well as others. We did Word Seed, which was, you know, really great curation of products, but it just had the wrong audience for the area. And then we've just partnered with a supercar network of like high net worth individuals for like our top end clients. So we're always just trying to find new ways of getting in front of new people. And then the other big part of it is that we've kind of had a focus over the last couple of years around 4 key metrics, which is, you know, AOV and IPT, but also trying to eradicate shipping loss, which obviously, you know, is a big thing within e-commerce, because it's so hard to ship things. And then also our margins. So alcohol margins aren't particularly great. So working on how we can be more efficient in it and what we're selling. And all of those things have enabled us to grow more and more throughout the last 2 or 3 years. So our growth is probably almost 16 times what it was in 2019 now. So it's been a journey. We've learned a lot along the way, but it's been good.
Great. Yeah, I think that that test and learn piece definitely makes you guys a great client. Like every time you come into our office, which is almost too often, you know, you've got about 15 new ideas. And I think that keeps things exciting. And I guess, so you touched on this a little bit, but the big challenge with multi-brand, particularly nowadays, is kind of customer acquisition costs have gone up and, you know, a lot of the big channels have become more expensive. So the big challenge is scaling acquisition without the margin that a brand might typically have. So how have you kind of got around this? What's your strategy here?
Yeah, I think one of the things we find the hardest as a multi-brand retailer, it's kind of what we talked about with Sports Edit and Mattel as well. When you're a multi-brand retailer, if you were to put a billboard up on in a middle of Oxford Street on Piccadilly Circus with a bottle of Johnny Walker, all that does is drive traffic towards the product or the brand, not where to buy it from. And that's been a real struggle for us. So the growth came a lot around shopping. People know, having an intent, knowing what product they wanted, us having the best price and having a really strong performance marketing team to optimize all of the catalogs for that. So that's how we've acquired a lot of customers. But then also a massive driver for us as well has always been affiliates. When we were first doing affiliates, it was very much the dirty side of, you know, customer acquisition, and it was always the discounters and commissions and
cashback
sites like Quidco and Amex. But now everyone starts to see that it's actually a brilliant way of acquiring new customers. And it actually isn't that bad in terms of cost of sale. Like, you're obviously setting a percentage of your commission, but that's probably in a lot of cases better and more efficient value than what you spend on paid, from a shopping perspective at least. And then because of the number of products we've had a big focus on organic and making sure that the pages are categorized correctly and the product detail on the data that we had, because when I think we first started working with you, you guys were like, your data is shocking. Like, how do anyone navigate your site? And we did a whole piece about like learning tax, like building the taxonomy for our products. Where do they sit? How do they sit? And how does somebody navigate to what they want? And how do we service a request of someone that knows exactly what they want, or someone that's quite agnostic of what, you know, they're buying a gift for their father, doesn't know what whiskey, they're just going to say, oh, whiskey. But if you know what you want, you can go further down into the journey. And then, as I say, always looking for new channels as well. So anything that pops up, Rubiera, the supercar company that we're looking at, has been great for getting in front of small networks, but really high net worth, targeted people that want to spend a lot of money on site, want to have some of the best and rarest products. We've just launched a whole collection called the Seller Collection that is a kind of curation of not only limited editions, but all rarities, back vintages. It's just a cool curation of products. And we also do a lot of import as well. So we'll import products from the US, so making sure that the customer gets to have the latest and greatest in alcohol from us, that we're the go-to guys to go and get those products. So that's how we've kind of nailed that customer acquisition piece.
Attract, your complete product discovery growth engine. Create relevant shopping experiences that convert into sales and grow online revenue with personalized search, merchandising, and recommendation solutions powered by AI. Find out more at attract.com.
And you've mentioned, and we also talked about, I think, around the panel event, about using contribution margin within marketing activity and merchandising. Can you talk us through how this works? Like, you know, how you're using it, basically, and where you're using it?
Yeah, so it's we've been doing it for the last 5 months, I think it is, where we've got rid of product category collections within shopping, and we're using margin buckets instead, because that way we can be more aggressive. If you've got, you know, one whiskey that's got 50% margin and you've got one whiskey that's got 10% margin, you're not able to spend 10% cost of sale on both of those items. But also, if you just set a blanket rule for all whiskey, then you're actually detrimenting the sales of the higher margin and then, you know, overspending on the other. So moving them into the margin brackets has been a really strong driver for us to be able to spend more efficiently and harder on products that we can, being more visible. And again, that's always about, I always call it more hooks in the water. So the more hooks in the water, the more visible we are, the more fish we can catch. And that's always why we've always added more products and tried to expand that portfolio from 1,200 products to 10,000. So we've got an answer to everybody's question.
And I know you've been on Shopify Plus for a few years. I think Paul mentioned about 4 years, is it now? We've done lots of podcasts with lots of brands, you know, a lot of people on Shopify, people on different platforms. And the bit that we always love to find out is the tech stack around the core platform. Can you talk a bit through like the end-to-end tech stack? You know, what else are you using around Shopify? How much of it is Shopify's ecosystem, like the apps, versus other third-party specialist systems?
Yeah, so we moved away from a lot of Shopify's native functionality because we wanted to really expand how strong our offering was as a platform. So we actually use Algolia for our search and match. So all of our collections are powered by Algolia, which has actually enabled a lot more customization and functionality than what would have necessarily been in Shopify, especially from a merchandising perspective. We've then built PIM using Akeneo, which has been great for getting that data crypt. What's really cool that we've done with the PIM, what the PIM's enabled, I should say, is that we use an app called Better Reports, which is brilliant app, one of the best apps I think on Shopify. So I use it every day. And what having the right tags does is it unlocks information. So say we've been selling, you know, 50 different bottles of whiskey for the last 5 years, but there was no tags on it. You can just report on the product ID or, you know, a category. But as you start adding tags, you can start discovering trends and more data that, from historic sales than you would have done originally. So we added on Isla whiskey, and it has a cork, and it has, it's a glass bottle, and it's this size. And then we were able to report, actually, we're seeing a trend up in Isla whiskey versus Highland whiskey's gone down, for example, rather than just seeing whiskey growing. So that's a really interesting and powerful way that we've gained from the PIM. We've got Yotpo for reuse and UGC, and we also got SMS bump that we're just kind of rolling out slowly. Savio for our email database and our CRM, which is, you know, is the best one I've ever used. When we first moved, we had 60,000 followers and 60,000 people in our database. We've got like 800,000 people now. Paul hates how we got them, but we use Wealio on site, and it's not on brand, it's not pretty, but it is a brilliant tool for customer acquisition, or at least getting people into your database. And then our content that we send out emails is really strong. So they perform really well. We've got a really good engaged database, and the sales that go through the email platform are really strong. We've then got Rebuy. We've basically launched a four-tier approach to upselling. Because of the, like, how wide our category is, we've got minis, we've got barware, we've got cases. So on a PDP, we have the larger upsells. So then, yeah, upsell to a case or have it as a bundle and buy 5 or 6 different products. If they're not interested in that level of upsell, then when they add to cart, they're then seeing products that are similar category or brand to that the product they put in. So that just, it maybe want to add another bottle of Ciroc or another bottle of rum to your order that you might not have already known about. And then we've got in cart, we've got mixers and barware. So things that are appropriate to buy a bottle of wine, it's going to upsell you some nice wine glasses or a corkscrew or something similar to that. And then you get into kind of lower stuff in checkout. Well, we sell vape, so we sell a lot of vape through the checkout as a kind of add-on purchase. But we also do a little bit more targeted things around you know, cheaper corkscrews, cheaper barware, little accessories, wine charms, just to add, get that basket spend up a little bit more. Better Reports, as I said, brilliant app. I wouldn't say it's in a tech stack, but it's something that we use every day for everything. And the way that it spits out reports as a schedule into Google Sheets, and then you can start using those to leverage other reports, which I can go into more detail. The Vault Census app is really strong. Because it's straight after purchase, people are able to actually engage with it rather than if you were to have a survey on site, people might say, I'm not going to do that. Because they're purchasing it, we ask just a couple of questions and we've got really actionable insights out of it. So we recently found out over 50% of our orders are for gifts. We asked, you know, who are you buying for? Are you buying for yourself? Are you buying for a gift? Are you buying for work? And the overwhelming proportion was gifting, which is then put onto our roadmap that we need to make sure that our gift offering is as good as possible. We've just launched a new gift menu on site because of the insights that we've gained from Census. And then I'm obviously massive nerd as well, so we were some of the early adopters of like ChatGPT, and we had Jarvis that used to be that is now Jasper for one of our product descriptions. I'm trying to use AI to kind of automate as much as we can. And we're quite a small team, so anywhere we can leverage AI to take over as much of the work as possible, we will. It's been really good. And we've also started a trend of ChatGPT cocktails. So we've built a recipe library of cocktails on site, and we're building a bunch of them that have all been generated by ChatGPT. We'll say, make us a cocktail using Bombay Sapphire, and it'll come up with three different options, and then we'll pick one and then kind of refine it a little bit in terms of our tone of voice. So that's been a really fun little project.
Great.
Also, So we're just in the process of building a map for product discoverability. I think there's the way that people shop and discover brands. A lot of cases, a grocery where you go and just pick the whiskey you haven't had before, for example. But we sell Australian whiskey, we sell German whiskey, French whiskey, Danish whiskey, things that you wouldn't necessarily know were a producer of that. And obviously, you've got your vineyards. One for people who've already been to a place but want to find where it was, or people that want to buy from the category but want to know from different areas. It's a real cool way to find new products. That's the kind of basis of our business.
Hypersonics helps e-commerce companies make more profit every day. This AI-driven platform delivers recommendations for pricing and inventory that lead to bigger profits. Visit hypersonics.ai/podcast to get a free trial.
Great. The Wheelio one was very annoying because Census has, had a number of flags from customers, and Liam and I really pressed to get rid of that thing. But unfortunately, somehow the data proved us very much wrong. That remains annoyingly. So on the PIM, so you touched on the PIM and you talked about a few benefits, but I guess beyond some of that stuff, it's really helped you from utilization of internal resources and, some of the automation stuff you've done has been really beneficial. So can you talk us through how you're using the Kinyo and, is it a free version, premium version? Just talk us through that a little bit.
So it's the free version. We've got it hosted on the DigitalOcean server. And we have a freelance developer that just kind of manages that platform and knows Kinyo pretty well. We gave him a pretty savage brief when we started it. It's like, this is what we wanted to do. These are all the factors we want to have. Obviously, you can imagine the amount of potential detail that can sit on any product, any of our products at any one time. So we've had to build families, and obviously from the wine family, we're talking about grapes and vintages and ages, but how it was stored. Does it have a core? Whereas in spirits, you're talking about the taxonomy of where does it sit within spirits? Because spirits can go into five different categories, and they've got five different categories, and it just gets further down. So it's been instrumental for taxonomy, collection organization, and filtering. So Algolia is great at filtering, but it needs something to filter against. So building structured data that can then be looked up as information rather than just some of the native fields within Shopify has just made it so much easier to navigate our site. And when we were managing, just 1,200 products manually without a PIM, having to remember to put this tag on, I'll duplicate this product, and then copying the tags over from somewhere else, it was unmanageable for the amount of things that we wanted to be able to do. So building on it and adding that data has powered the entire site, really. The data validation is the other thing. So you can't, because we want it to be so structured and have the bread, like fake breadcrumbs that Shopify doesn't like for organic and SEO. We have like our tier system, and the tiers, you select spirits, and then the only options below that are these following spirits, rather than you can't handle spirits, but then put up red wine and then something else. So it's been really accurate, really focused. And then you can't push the product live to site until there's a certain level of mandatory fields completed to make sure that you're never putting something inadequate live on site.
I think it's been really, we've definitely seen a noticeable improvement in like the quality of data and, less mistakes and less product being pushed live with, minimal data, et cetera. So I think that's been really good. And then I guess on kind of product discoverability, you've talked a bit around your range, and you've obviously got a lot of SKUs on the site. You touched on Algolia, but can you just talk a bit more around kind of how it's helped you from a collection merchandising perspective?
Yeah. So when we first got Algolia, I think Algolia out of the box wasn't great, if I'm honest. We were only using click and conversion data. And what that did is any product that didn't particularly land well when it was loaded would just get further and further and further down the collection. And obviously we've got over 550 gins, for example. And one example I use is there's a product called Bombay Premier Crew Gin. And when they launched it, they didn't launch particularly well. It didn't land very well. The price book was a little bit off. And it didn't sell. But within about a month, it had gone from being position one, because it was the rarest, to being on like page 7. And no one was going to ever find out about it. So what we basically have built is what we call Smart Merch Tool. And that takes in 5 metrics around inventory value, weeks of sale, and margin, and basically scores every product. And then that gets pushed back into Algolia to re-merchandise. So it means that we're not losing products that we need to push. We're able to be smarter about what's in position or what people are seeing first. And it's regularly changing daily with the latest scores and how it's selling in inventory and everything else. So if you've got something that's at really high value, stock value, and you've got loads of units of it and you've got a good margin on it and you haven't sold any for a couple of weeks, that's going to be at the top. And then if you've got something you've only got one of and the margin's pretty poor, it's just going to bring itself down the list. So it's not as important to push. And then, yeah, that's managed through Algolia, looking at this just a mess of fiddle. And then we have what we call the Boost Collection, which is an additional collection that just sits in Shopify. This manages Liquid. You add the products to it, and Algolia looks at that collection. So any product that is in there, that is in the collection that you're in, will be prioritized to the top of the page. Just as I said, these are our focus products, regardless of what you're in. So we want to push Premier Crew, we put it in the Boost Collection. That will be, because it's in the gin page and the London Dry Gin page, it goes to position one or higher up, if you know what I mean. And that's enabled us to make so many more products visible to customers other than just bestsellers. As you can imagine, there's too many products for us to manually merchandise and prioritize. So this is, both of those tools have enabled us to kind of, not AI, but kind of leave it to do its thing. And it's just improved our margin dramatically. I think it's a 30% increase in margin since launching smart merchandising, plus the margin bucketing in shopping. We've seen a great range, an increase in AOV, increase in IPT. So it's proved a really powerful functionality for us. But we have had to learn as we go with Algolia. Algolia can do so many things. And from a search perspective, we probably might even scratch the surface, especially with like contextual searches and non-strength queries. We haven't focused on, but it's been a powerful backbone for the business.
Yeah, I think with search, it's when you get a powerful tool, realizing that when you have those extra hours to be able to look into not just your core queries, and especially around, I think around some of the peak where you just get a real surge and you get more of the long tail queries that normally are just like, you know what, there's too small volume to worry about. It's very interesting to realize how many dead ends there are. Every single e-commerce site out there has search dead ends. So intriguing to have this conversation maybe 12 months and see how that might change. But a podcast wouldn't be a podcast thing. Yeah, go for it.
One thing I forgot to add is we've rebuilt our search drop down as well. So we have been able to prioritize the products that we're pushing within that search as soon as you open it. And then we've also, because we've got so many categories, products and brands, we've been able to use that data for the search. So if you were to search for Hennessy, rather than just showing 10 products of Hennessy, it also shows you in the right hand side the Hennessy collection, the Hennessy brand. And then also we've got our recipe library. So then any recipe that contains Hennessy or cognac is then being shown in that search as well, which has been great for discoverability. And then we've also enabled like an ad block basically at the bottom of the search for certain search queries. We can make it display an image. So it's advertising space or activation opportunity for our brands, which is a big part of our business. So if you were search for Glenmorangie or Highland Whiskey right now, then the Glenmorangie sub-banner would fit at the bottom of the search bar. So that's been great for somebody that's not really sure what they're looking for. It's just showing them something sooner.
Yeah, I know. Search results pages are so underused in terms of testing opportunities. So it's really good to hear that you're using the tool, but also thinking about other user journeys you can get people into product discovery. So it's not, because you see so many searches which just end up, people leave search and they either leave the site or they go into like browse because they can't find what they want. So yeah, interesting. My next question is around, like, everyone talks about the economy. It came up at the event, and the event I was at yesterday, Attract conference, was the same. Love to hear your perspective on it, because people talk about increasing prices, pressures, you know, the struggle with margins and profitability. Like, what are the key things you're seeing in your industry? And like, what are some things that you're trying to tackle on site, I guess, to handle the macro influences?
Out of stocks is an issue for us at the moment. We do have a lot of products that we just, the allocation is really small, or access is difficult, or timings are really slow. Well, there is also price increases across the board, even in some like soft drinks, getting, you know, regular price increases, which is a struggle. I think everybody is aware of it. And for us, we sit in a funny space, because what we call off-trade alcohol retail versus the on-trade, which is bars and restaurants, where our prices are considerably lower. So if you were to buy a bottle of champagne at a bar, you can buy a case of champagne probably at the same price from us. So there is a pinch in terms of our pricing is going up, but actually we gain customers because the price has gone up in the bars and restaurants as well. They're going to actually have to buy and bring this at home. So that's kind of swings around about in terms of cost of living. Allocation of stock is one of the biggest issues. So we've got quite a lot of products out of stock at the moment, which is a constant struggle for our buyers to try and source. You know, even the brand owners don't have all of the stock that we require. So we're trying to find other areas. And as I say, we do a lot of imports. And then with the smart merchandising tool we've talked about, what that's helped us to not hide, but kind of those out of stock products that would be quite noticeable normally go further down the page. And there is always a product or something that's relevant to make it, to answer the question if the thing that they're not looking for is there. We've managed to capitalize on it, I think, but that is one of our main struggles. And then the one that we always deal with is just advertising restrictions. So both vape, which we sell a lot of on site, and alcohol, both come with severe advertising restrictions, and can't do Google Display, for example, for alcohol. You can't do kind of the shopping Instagram. There's a lot of things that we can't do that if we were a fashion brand or hardware brand or something else would be a lot easier to be visible for. But we've picked the two most difficult industries to be in, do at the same time. So, and that's been it's been hard.
Yes. Yeah, interesting. The Crown Peak Attract conference yesterday in London, a lot of conversation came up amongst retailers about stock and peak and stock planning and prioritizing good stock positions over those where there may be less reliability over replenishment. I think it's a common challenge. Another question I've got is it strikes me that Bottle Club has done a hell of a lot of work around new features and improving the front end with quite a lean team. I'd love to know, because everyone wants practical stuff, like, you know, what did people do? How did it work? Can you give us a few examples of things that you have done, whether it's a feature or improvements, and what impact they've had?
Yeah, so those are the smart merchandising we've kind of already covered. So that's been a big driver. We gained a lot of organic visibility from really focused on Search Console. So going through Search Console, going through Ahrefs, checking for any kind of SEO-related errors, and trying to nail the cleanliness of those pages and the experience being as good as possible. So we've done a lot of work around internal linking. We've obviously got the recipes on site, which has been one great for upselling additional products to basket for the product that they're on, but it's also been great to drive into blog content and then be acquired from an informational query, like how do I make a porn star martini, but then actually end up in the commerce, transactional scenario because of that journey from the recipe to the product. And that structure and internal making breadcrumbs has been massive for Search Console. There's obviously always, you to stay on top of it, you can easily make one small error and it have a dramatic impact in your Search Console number, that we once turned off a collection that was linked in the navigation. So we had like 10,000 errors within about 20 minutes because it was 404 for everybody. So Search Console, brilliant tool for keeping on top of that for organic. We have got Render Better on site now, 2.0, and that's made a massive impact on Core Web Vitals. So it's an optimization speed platform. It originally was just dedicated straight to code, but now it's actually got a subdomain that it runs off, and it has made a dramatic impact into our own performance. Our old site used to be dead slow. We used to moan about it all the time, and now it's, I think at one point you said it's one of your fastest sites.
In the in Shopify, in our partner account, they benchmark performance scores, and I think you're fastest. You're the highest.
I'd love to know.
It's been massive for that.
I'd love to know, like, what has it done? Because speed, the trade off between like making everything faster but not screwing up your customer experience by stripping out, you know, important customer features is one thing that a lot of retailers have struggled with. And yeah, apart from the obvious things, like, you know, minimization, compression, optimizing images, are there any key things it's done that surprise you in terms of like, wow, didn't realize that was going to have such an impact?
Yeah, I don't know if I can give an example of what it's done, but it cleans up all of our CSS, and it's always constantly optimizing every time somebody loads on page.
One of the biggest things it does is it like sequences third party JavaScript. So it's kind of similar to Yotta. We had them on the podcast. And then there's also a lot of work to like reduce the impact of kind of JavaScript that you're not using as part of at that time. And then they do a lot of work around assets as well, don't they? And they kind of host certain assets on that subdomain, but they spend a lot of time on it as well. They've got quite a good service around just their kind of core product.
They do a bit of development as well. So if they see an optimization that we could be making as well, it's not just the app and platform that does it. There's also a team behind it. Go, well, you know, if you did this, you'd actually be able to improve the score there, or this one app is actually sucking some of your performance out. So we've actually rebuilt the Rebuy widget, for example. We use a Rebuy for the logic behind it, the data sets, but we're serving our own widget. And that's made a big impact because you're already pulling the CSS that's already loaded straight into onto the face.
And I think the thing with your site as well, because you use so many third parties, like there are a lot of third parties, there is a lot of third party JavaScript. And you know, there's a lot of videos and things like that. So it's pretty quick, I think, now, all things considered.
And then the other thing you said, back on your question about the new features, with the PIM and the stripped data, we've like focused on the navigation. So we've got a really detailed navigation structure. It all fits the taxonomy, but we've also got lifestyle images within there, trying to promote products in each of its individual categories. It just, for us, it's great because we know how hard it was to navigate previously. So we're really proud of now that you can go on the site and get to exactly where you want to get to, because of the navigation and the taxonomy that we've built and the breadcrumbs in which, you know, the organization that, then we've got their upsell strategy, that we talked about. That's been, instrumental for us. And then we've just launched their gifting menu set. There's some of the, you know, front end improvements that we've done that are working. And we've done things that haven't and slowed the site down, but they're the ones that are really like, have helped a lot.
Great. And I guess one of the things that I found pretty interesting working with you guys and some of the other multi-brand retailers we've worked with has been kind of maybe like the co-marketing side and even like the on-site kind of real estate management piece and kind of like how you work commercially with some of the brands. So maybe you can talk a bit about that and kind of how you work with the brands from an activation perspective as well.
Yeah. So we have some of the best relationships with some of the biggest names in alcohol, in like kind of top level wholesale level. So, you know, Diageo, Brown-Forman, Moët Hennessy would be a big one. And over the last 3 or 4 years, we've run, you know, small campaigns, and then it's grown into, you know, a behemoth of kind of side business almost in terms of managing those activations. Because we have so many products, we need to be promoting certain things and make people aware that this new and amazing products there, well, this is making sure that that brand's relevant within the category. So we get investment or partnership deals or JBPs with these businesses, and then we it's mainly for direct, but you know, kind of plaster that brand and that campaign throughout the site. And we've been over the last year trying to work out where else we can put the content. So we mentioned in the search bar. So whenever we have an activation for, like, example, Hennessy, if you search for Cognac, you search for Hennessy, you search for Courvoisier, any of the terms where Hennessy would be viable, we're showing that Hennessy banner for that new product or that campaign that we're doing. It just, you see such an increase in that brand's sales, not just on the product that we're pushing, but also the whole brand itself. So we did, Moët Hennessy recently did some data work against our sales. We share our sales data with them. And they were like, whenever we run a campaign, even if we run it on a £30 bottle, we see all the prestige products fly as well. So you'll suddenly start selling bottles in Hennessy Paradis or XO that weren't in promote, just made the brand more visible. So yeah, as I say, we've tried to work out how do we make the PLPs more visible. If you're on any PLP and you're promoting the two newest products that we're trying to showcase, or the campaign that we're running, the navigation, if it's in the relevant area, we show making sure the campaign's there. That it's like we're a billboard for them, because we're just promoting them in their categories, and it's great for both people, both sides of the business. So great for us to get more sales in lines that we would have not necessarily have sold, and it's great for the brand to get bigger exposure while selling more stock to us. It's kind of a win-win for everybody.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think that whole side of, like, that whole piece is getting bigger and bigger. Like, I was talking to someone the other day about ASOS's new ad network that the brands can use. And obviously, like, Amazon have been doing that for years. But yeah, it's interesting how many brand sites are trying to monetize the traffic better and, like, use some of their traffic to, like, improve margin.
We haven't really scratched the surface on it, to be fair. We've just done it from a direct point, but actually, we need to start looking at how do we do it in, like, paid advertising, how do we run ads in line with that.
Yeah.
If they're running a campaign for, because you'll see, like, Glenmorangie will do a campaign, like a billboard campaign saying my Sainsbury's, but how do we do that? How do we be the partnership for that brand externally, not just internally? And we have also always looked at, like, sponsored positioning, but I think with what we talked about with the smart merchandising and boosting, we kind of already have that without having to kind of start building some algorithm, some app to start taking monetizing it, but in my personal future.
Makes sense. And I guess on that topic, so obviously you and Sham, the kind of founder of the Bottle Club, have about 10,000 ideas. What's next for the Bottle Club? Like, what are the things that you're going to roll out over the next 12 months?
So we're rolling out a new app. We were probably the first alcohol retailer, online retailer to have dedicated iOS and Android app. Did great for us, brilliant for retention, great for direct communication with customers. As much as we've optimized our mobile site, and 8% of our traffic is the mobile site, we still have a dedicated app because of that direct communication, because of retention, because of ease of use. If you buy from us regularly, rather than signing in and having to manage your cookies, you just can go straight to the app. You've got your last order, you can manage everything from there. And we used Tapcart originally, which is, we worked on Tapcart when they just started. I think he must have told us about them. And it was brilliant. It was great to be able to launch an app so quickly. It proved its worth. It's more than made its return on investment. But what we've realized now is it probably lacks a bit of the functionality that we built on site. So we want to maximize the app, what the app can do. So the recipes that we've built into the new app, because we want it to be as much of a reference and an interactive app as it is a commerce app. So that way, if you're not worried about, I need to go buy something, but I've got my friends over, I want to see if I can make a Negroni. How do I make a Negroni? Go to my Bottle Club app, go to the recipes, and like, oh, well, actually, I haven't got your Campari. Quick add to cart. It just kind of circular experience.
I've never had the last problem where I've got that. I hope I never have that where I need Campari.
Only you were.
Well, that's, isn't that happens you often where the Campari's down, running low?
No, it's normally the whiskey that's very low in our house. But I actually have to imagine my bar is pretty well stocked of some very random things. My friends love coming over because it's going to be what we're going to make today. Recently tried an olive oil-based cocktail, which was a bit strange, but it was good.
I'm looking forward to making a purchase when I have my six-week no-drinking zone ready for the summer. So it's going to be an interesting browsing around your catalogue.
Yeah, glad to hear it. We stay on top of trends as well because of the common brand that we've built. So somebody told me the other day that there's a whole thing on TikTok at the moment around what they call clarified cocktails. So it's milk-based cocktails like pina coladas, but they're clarifying the milk and removing the curd. So they're actually like clear pina colada. So now I messaged the team. I was like, clarified cocktails, go find out some more about it. And then within an hour, I've got two recipes on site linked to the products. And it's just staying on top of things like that is kind of what makes the reason our business is that our team is so small is so we can remain agile. We're always thinking of the new best thing and expanding in different areas. But to answer the rest of your question, we launched the map, which we're super excited about. It might be a gimmick, but we think it's a really cool way of experiencing and discovering the products. I think after our conversation at the summit, product discoverability is a huge thing, especially when you've got a large portfolio. So what else can we do for product discoverability? We're then also looking at how we can bring in more revenue from other channels rather than just what we're doing. So we're looking at starting a B2B side of the business and a B2B experience, looking at getting corporate and concierge into it. So with these high net worth clients, having a more personal experience with a concierge client manager, and then also events. So we've obviously got a great portfolio of products and we did a good job of promoting those products on site with reviews and UGC. But the thing is, it's better to go and taste those products, which is the one thing that you can't do. It's a bit like if you're a player on the website, you can try it on and then get a refund, but we obviously can't do that with alcohol. So getting in front of customers directly and doing a tasting, for example, and saying, this is the tequila event, come down, try these five different tequilas, learn a bit more about it, build an affinity to the brand, and then get some brands involved in it as well so they can talk about it from their perspective. They're kind of our focuses for the next 12 months. But as Paul says, we've got 10,000 ideas, so that's just the ones we've capitalized at the moment, but there'll probably be some more.
Excellent. Look, it's been really, really interesting. This is what I love about e-commerce. There's a million and one things you can do, and everyone's focused in different areas. And technology's changing all the time. So, look, Tim, really appreciate you taking the time to join us and share insights into how you're attacking e-commerce at the Bottle Club and where you're going with it. And also, thanks, everyone, as always, for listening in. We do appreciate it. Keep your ears open for next episode. We drop them every Tuesday. And don't forget to give us that rating on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you might be listening and watching. Take care, everybody. Until next time. For more information on this topic, head over to replatform.fm for our audio podcasts. To discuss a project, or if you'd like to chat about any of the topics covered in this episode in more detail, please reach out to myself, James Gerd, or my co-host, Paul Rogers, via LinkedIn and Twitter. Thanks again for listening, and keep your ears peeled for the next episode.